I thought about what I might talk about with you tonight, given that you just did a day-long retreat. And there's so many things you can talk about in a Dana talk. And I find for myself, I tend to be drawn to those subjects that focus on directly and immediately relieving suffering in day-to-day life. And I thought, since you probably got some time on the cushion, I was going to speak more to off the cushion tonight. What can we do to lead a happier life, to suffer less in everyday life? And because we suffer less, of course, creating less suffering for others. So tonight, I'd like to offer three practices off the cushion for leading a more peaceful, balanced life. But they require an introduction, really, a perspective, which I know because I'm speaking to a lot of experienced meditators, they know what is referred to in Buddhism as right view. So right view, it begins with the idea that we're all leading the same life, and it's the life of samsara, right? And maybe we're at different points in that journey, but it's all the same trail. If you haven't noticed, birth, growth and becoming, old age, decline and death. Okay. And it's not just our lives, but our careers, our relationships, our bodies that follow that same path. It comes into being, it grows, it declines, and it passes. Right? And you might think of that impermanence as bad news. But the good news is that if you can really see that, you don't put your eggs in that basket. And that's really right view. It's possible to live life from a different place that doesn't hang its happiness on that worldly path with its worldly winds, right, that will simply blow all the time. There can be a kind of pulling out of our dependence on all this, our dependence on samsara. And then we remove ourselves from that cycle. And it doesn't mean life in a cave, right? We can live as householders. We can cultivate the place of awareness as our home, as opposed to the comings and goings of life. And it may not sound easy to do, and sometimes I think, can I just get this? Can I just get this? But it means that just as we can see there's sound, and then there's awareness of sound, we can recognize that there is the path of that which happens, right? Samsara, everyday life, one thing after the other, the emails, the phone calls, the things to do on the to-do list, the planning, all that. And then there is the path of awareness of that which happens. And that is something else, right? The place in us that sees all that going on. And they are very different places to reside if we can change our home in this. And so the question for me as a meditator is, how do I move my consciousness, which is to say the sense of my life and who I am, to that awareness and disentangle my involvement with the next thing on the road of samsara? And how do I do this consistently enough and confidently enough that I remain aware of the deeper knower and the inner illumination that comes with that on a daily basis? Okay? That really is, when I wake up in the morning, that's what I consider my task. And so I want to share with you three practices that I found useful in living my day more in awareness. And they are all kind of interruptions in the stream of things. You know, the stream of things being samsara, all the things, you know, that's going to happen in my day. And we interrupt that stream that carries us away. And I would say for me, this is more about feeling my life on a different level than it is conceptually seeing it differently, although, you know, the two go together. But it really is a felt sense that it's different. And I begin with the simplest of practices that I want to offer. How you wake up. If you're like me, you don't wake up in awareness. I pretty much wake up in desire, aversion, and delusion, to use Buddhist terms. But these sound so terrible and dramatic. In everyday terms, what I'm talking about, I'd say instead that my wake-up mind is either spacey, right, still lost in the grogginess of sleep, or it's wrapped in planning for what I have to do next in the day. And often with a tethered feeling, right, of pleasantness or unpleasantness, depending on what that is. Oh, it's going to be a good day, it's going to be a bad day. Right? That's how I wake up. That is aversion, desire, and delusion, right? This is not how I want to wake up. Already attached to the conditions of samsara. So, to start the day in mindfulness, I have to insert a pause, almost a stop, in the waking up process. And so my practice is, I don't get out of bed until I have a felt sense of mindfulness. Okay? I wake up, I notice all that's going on, I just stay there with it until that sense of mindfulness comes. And then if there are swirling thoughts that I'm sitting with, all I have to do is see that there are swirling thoughts, just like I do in my sitting meditation, right? And then nourish for a moment the separate place that sees the swirling thoughts. Okay? And I know you all know what I'm talking about, right? The place that sees the thoughts. Just sit there for a minute. And if I'm spaced out, I take a moment to notice the fog. And then mindfulness can kind of act as a kind of superpower, because when called forth, when applied, the mindfulness cuts through the fog. It lifts. And it just takes a couple of minutes, really, sometimes just a couple of seconds to sit with it before I get out of bed. That fog, okay? And if I apply it to my monkey mind, the swirling thoughts subside, moving into the background. And then I'm ready to get up. And for a moment, my real home emerges. And that's so important to me, to touch my real home before I get up. And I found that it doesn't take that much to begin the day on a different footing. And that footing just because I start that way can help me to stay more anchored in awareness during the day. Okay? So easy to try. So I invite you to do that. And this is not to say that the swirling thoughts never happen again. Of course they do, right? But the practice of seeing them, especially the first thing in the morning, helps you not to mistake them for your life. And that's the right view part, right? The problem for all of us is getting sucked into the vortex of the winds, the worldly winds, right? And believing that this weather is my life. And when I do, then very quickly, my day can become all the energies of trying to control the worldly winds or catch them or avoid them and all the dramas I create by doing this. That's what life in, my life in samsara looks like, right? What all our lives in of samsara look like, right? Just trying to control it all. So the path will always be in the awareness of the present moment. It will always be closer when the mind stops, really when the eye stops. Right? And society devalues moments of stopping. Get on with it, you know? But these are actually great moments. So, you know, let yourself not get up right away. Introduce that stop first thing to interrupt the flow. And let me put in a plug for in our Sangha, which you can get it online, the Flagstaff Insight Meditation Sangha, every morning at 5 a.m. and at 7:30 a.m. They do silent sits. And if you happen to be up and you want to start that way, you can just get on the website and sit with people. It's not even led. They just sit together. Okay. And that could be the first thing you do. And the second, these are all kinds of these interruption practices in the flow of samsara. So the second thing I found useful is building dana into my day. Okay. And dana, as you know, you have it 7 a.m. with Gil Fronsdale too. Okay, great. Okay.
Oh, sorry, Kathy, I didn't want to interrupt you.
No, that's great. That's great. No, that's not an interruption. It's a help, right? It fits right in. Yeah, those. That's great to do it on. Because right now we're an hour different from you. We're an hour later.
Okay.
And sometimes Arizona, we're the same. We're the same time.
Yep, I know.
Right.
Saving.
Okay, so that's great. But that's a really nice practice to do if you're able, if your schedule allows. So the dana piece, as you know, is generosity. And what it interrupts is a focus on I and mine. And the samsara mind that centers on what I want and what I don't, which is, you know, just part of daily life. You know, I want this, I don't want that, And although we're used to hearing the word dana in conjunction with giving gifts to Dharma teachers, okay, that's not what I mean, okay? I'm talking about a different kind of dana here, beyond material gifts. And this generosity often takes the form of your attention, of listening, of allowing, maybe even a mindful not doing, a restraint, okay? A different way to look at dana. So how can you offer dana or generosity in everyday life, in daily life? And it's kind of a fun practice to find this for yourself. And I find that this is also a great interruption. This really helps my daily life peace, right? I love traffic, Donna. Okay. The UPS truck is double parked in the right-hand lane. You're in the left lane. And a car is coming up that's going to have to stop on the right, you know, at the truck and get stuck there. And so you slow down and you wave them in. Oh, my God. You know, there's a palpable feeling of goodwill. For a moment, the focus wasn't my fastest way down the road, you know. And I don't know if anybody's ever done that for you. You know, they just wave you in, right, in a place where they don't have to. But it's such a nice feeling to receive, okay? And it makes me feel that the next person who wants in, that I want to pass it forward. It's a nice thing to do. Telemarketers are fantastic opportunities. Can you treat them with politeness and caring, even though you won't be hearing their pitch? Okay? Or picture the delight of a friend or a relative who has just opened the handwritten card you sent them for no occasion. You know, who gets real mail anymore these days? It's such a gift to get a note. That's all it takes, just a note. And you know, once in a while, because my Dharma teaching has been with students or inmates at the jail who don't have a lot of means, Donna comes in the form of a thoughtful handwritten note rather than money. And I so appreciate the effort and the sentiment there. It's very beautiful to me when I get that. Okay. Maybe the homeless person sitting in front of the supermarket, maybe you're not offering them money. Okay. Can you offer them a greeting? Can you offer them kind eyes? Okay. I do a lot of work with homeless people. It matters. And one of the things I've noticed is that in my own work is that people experiencing homelessness, that they're often treated so much with suspicion and aversion as the other. And that becomes one of the biggest sources of their suffering. So believe it or not, kind eyes or the greeting or just good morning is really a kind of gift, a kind of Donna. And sometimes Donna is what you don't give. Just the other day, I decided to not say again to my spouse, "I can't believe you threw another recycling item into the trash again." And so this time, I just took the item out of the garbage can and I put it in the little, you know, in the recycling bin. A little gift. Okay. It actually feels very nice. It adds to my pulling out of what I want and what I don't want and my normal samsara existence. I had this kind of Donna practice for more than a year with a 100-year-old relative named Evelyn, who was my mother's cousin. And she lived alone in New York, and although an aide came to give her meals and she had relatives, her continual talking resulted in their contacting her less often. Her mind was very sharp, and she even took online courses like art history. But the talking was so continual, really, that the instructor in the course had to make a rule that she was only allowed to talk for 2 minutes, and then they would mute her, okay, on the online course. So you can imagine she really had an issue with kind of motor mouth. And when my mother would be on the phone with her, she predictably had to end the conversation by saying, someone just came to the door, or, you know, something was in the oven that she had to get, okay? And that was pretty much every time they had that conversation. And I decided, after my mother died, which was a couple of years ago, to keep up communication with Evelyn. And I called her just once a month. But my practice was to allow her to speak as long as she wanted. And she would talk nonstop about her life, her political opinions, what she read in the paper, or what she learned in her class. And it was typically about an hour and 20 minutes straight until she was ready to hang up. And when she died last year, right after her 102nd birthday, I realized how much I miss these phone calls, right? And the wonderful opportunity it was to be in that place of the heart that wasn't just about me. So find out what fits for you. There are so many forms of offering that you can make during a day. Make it fun. Can you allow yourself to feel good without making yourself into a good person? Okay? Which just inflates the eye. Okay? So you have to be careful not to do that end. Can you feel the warmth of the offering without needing there to be a thank you or even a positive response? Sometimes, often really, the telemarketers that I do this with in my practice, that I treat politely and with caring, just hang up on me as soon as they realize I'm not going to buy their thing or listen to their pitch. It's really what's in my own heart that counts. It's my own heart that, if it's soft, that I live with, right? Doesn't matter. So try traffic, Donna, okay? And my last suggestion for daily life is probably the most challenging. But it's worth it. And it relates a little bit to what I briefly mentioned in our meditation. And it's stop your interest in thinking. And I know in many Buddhist circles, it's common to say that thought is not the enemy. And yes, thought is necessary for many things in life, like planning and decision making. And on the path, it's necessary too for investigation, for reflection. But honestly, thought, or our obsession with thought, is the problem in many ways. 90% of our thoughts are unnecessary, they're negative, they're repetitive, and they cause us to suffer. Probably 10% have that something else to offer. And if you look, they're so completely self-referenced, just doing the job of defending and scouting for the eye, and what the eye wants or what the eye doesn't want. In this sense, most thinking is like, I think of it as a tool of samsara. And I'm a professor, you know? So it's not like I don't think or I'm not interested in thinking. I'm interested in thinking. But when it enters my daily life and it's really all that I live in my mind, I live in the life of my mind, I realize it is a great source of suffering. Okay? Thought continually fools us into believing that if we pay attention to it, our lives will get better. And it's not true. And so we grab thought over and over again, and it becomes our abode. And when it does, our connection to that deeper level of awareness, that home that I've been talking about, is obscured. Thought obscures that home. And we get separated from who we really are. There are times to think, right? There are times to sit down and think or plan or do the things we have to do. But we don't want to keep living uninvited in the world of thought. Okay. And here's how Zen abbot and writer David Radin puts it. Let's go here. Let's go there. I want to do this. I want to do that. What do I do now? The mantra of thinking activity is what's next. That's its mode of operation. It can't rest in the present moment. When it rests, it dissolves. And in that dissolution, in that moment, the mind can awaken to its original luminosity, to that home, to that place, okay, which has been obscured by thinking. So Eckhart Tolle, whose spiritual path I admire, even if he doesn't call himself a Buddhist, says, the greatest achievement of my life was to learn how to stop thinking. Okay. And he says, not to be able to stop thinking, to interrupt it, is a dreadful affliction, but we don't realize it. Because almost everyone suffers from it. So it's considered normal. But this incessant mental noise is what's blocking the doorway to the inner stillness. He's saying the same thing. It's ironic. We don't have a lived sense of our own peace, deep peace, because we're convinced that the answer can be found in thinking and planning about what to do next. And so we live there. And Eckhart Tolle frequently reminds his readers, you know, his listeners, the primary cause of unhappiness is never the situation, it's your thoughts about it. Do you believe that? Okay. That's where right view comes back in. And all those these spiritual advisors use the phrase stop thinking. That's really not precisely what's meant, okay? What we do is stop believing our thoughts, stop our involvement and our identification with thoughts. We don't actually stop thinking or stop thoughts. They still come and go, all right? What we do is stop following them all the time. Stop thinking they're so important. But we also stop resisting them by trying to make them go away. And that's the kind of the middle way, that funny line that I was talking about as we did our meditation. How do you do that? Right? So I'm going to suggest... you know, there are many ways, and I know you have your own ways, how you deal with thought in your meditation. But this is helpful for also how we deal on thoughts in everyday life, that thinking, when we realize we're just caught in in our thoughts. And I'm going to suggest a three-step process when you find this. The first step, just interrupt. Just interrupt your enchantment with thought. Break the spell of thinking. You know? And you know what I mean by that. There's kind of a feeling of a spell, you know, when you're lost in thought. That gentle, seductive way that daydreaming pulls you in, or the grab that's kind of consuming of when you've had an argument with someone earlier in the day and it keeps replaying, or the persistent knocking at the door of the on your consciousness when there's something on the to-do list that's already pulled your attention 5 times today. In all those examples, thinking is hijacking your consciousness and taking you on a ride, right? We sometimes say we're on a train of thought, right? It really is kind of like a train. And it takes you places you didn't intend to go. And the destination is often unhelpful, if not just a source of suffering. So how many times a day does your consciousness fall under the spell of thought like this? We need to notice it, okay? And as firm as these pulls are in, you know, in sucking us in, we have to be firm too in breaking the spell. If you don't want to live continuously, like most people do, in thought, you need to notice its grab. So that's step one. Notice its grab and interrupt it. Oh, my mind is caught in thinking. And then step two. Find another place to go. Where else can I go? The suggestion is to move your attention, and the advice of the Rinpoche Lhotse Wangpo, who is the contemporary head right now of the Dogen lineage in Tibetan Buddhism. Okay, this is how he says to do it. Okay, interrupt, and then he says, you have to learn to change the object you're experiencing from what he calls that mental gossip, you know, what's going on in your head, in other words, thought, to the physical body. And he advises, you can come back to the breath. If you're walking, go to stepping. If you're washing the dishes, go to washing the dishes and the feel of washing the dishes. So that the awareness that you did not know existed the moment before comes within the range of your experience. And it's helpful to just turn it into something bodily, okay? You're thinking, interrupt, move to some sensation within your own body. Me, I often move my attention to my hands, and it just takes 2 seconds, literally. It's an extrication process. The mind that is truly aware of the hands or any other sensation is not thinking, because thinking and awareness don't coexist. They're two different channels in the brain. And so right now, even in the middle of thinking in this talk, you're thinking about what I'm saying, can you just pull out for a minute? Interrupt your thinking. Anchor yourself someplace in the body. Can you feel yourself pull out? Away from the talk. And now I'm going to ask you to come back in for a moment. Okay. For step three, and I'm continuing with the advice of this Rinpoche. Okay. With the feeling of the anchor in the body, he says, just allow any thoughts which revisit to come and go in the background. And he uses the phrase, this is what he, let come, let go. Let come, let go. And I use the image of balloons too, as they come and they go. And what that means is that's that middle way thing. And it's sometimes a difficult little place to be in. How do I deal with thoughts to let them go without pushing them away, right? I don't follow them, and I don't resist them. The middle way to deal with thought. That's what he says is most useful. Just don't flatter them with your attention. Think of them as no longer your business. And if they come knocking on the door of consciousness, not my concern. Let come, let go. Just like balloons coming and flying away on their own. And for a daily practice, I recommend just picking one kind of thinking to do this with in a day. And I'd ask you, what is the one area of thought that steals you away the most in your life or produces the most suffering for you? Is it worrying? Is it jealousy? Is it judging or self-judging? Is it complaining? Is it planning? Pick one area that's kind of your, the one that grabs you, and just say, I'm going to do the let come, let go with that. So that I live less of my day in whatever that kind of thinking is. And whatever it is, just notice when it arises in your day and make the commitment not to make it your business, not to attend to it and follow it. Using that three-step thing. Anchor in the, you know, interrupt it. Ah, there it is again. Anchor in the body. Let come, let go. Okay? To cultivate your non-involvement with that kind of, that type of thought. Okay? So this week, I'm going to invite you to experiment with those three different kind of daily interruption practices that put you in touch with clearing that clutter of samsara. Begin your day with a pause of mindfulness. Find the ways to offer dana in your day, interrupting that focus on me. And limit the time your consciousness spends in thought, and in particular the kind of thought that causes you the most suffering, and see what a difference that can make in your life. So wishing you all happy new abodes for the week, to live in a different place. Thank you for your attention.